From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 28th day of February 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll take a look at the agricultural news for the day. We'll discuss the weather forecast, that with Eric Snodgrass, and we'll take up what's been happening in the global marketplace with Mike Zuzlo at globalanalytics.biz on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, in Chicago today, March corn finished at 366.5, two higher. May at 368.25, up a quarter, and July unchanged at 372.5. December 377, down a half for the day. The March beans 2.75 lower at $8.83.5. The May at 892.75. 2.25 lower, and July down 3.25 at 901.5. November beans 908.25, 5.25 lower. Bean oil futures down 52 cents at 28.31. The bean meal at 298.60, up $1.70. Wheat futures soft red July down 2.75 at 526.25, and the hard red July at 460.25, a penny and a half higher for the day. Live cattle futures at 112.70 into February, 7.5 cents higher. However, April down 290 at 107.57. 7.5, and the feeders in the April at 132.70, down $1.37.5 for 100 pounds. Lean hogs on the day. April contract 27.5 cents lower at $62.27.5. Crude oil down $2 a barrel at this hour. Ethanol futures unchanged. Diesel 0.4 cents lower, and gasoline on the RBOB down 2 cents for the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average off about 400 points at this hour, and the gold futures down $58.30. We're now joined by Mike Zuzlo at globalanalytics.biz in Atchison, Kansas. He's traveling towards us for next Tuesday's All Day Ag Outlook. Hey, thanks, Mike, for being with us for the day.
Well, I just got done wrapping up a meeting at the beef house, Todd. I stole some rolls before Tuesday. Thought I'd come over and try it out. They're just as good as normal, and I expect a very big turnout with everybody thinking about coronavirus. We need to get together and have some fun and listen to some marketing advice and weather advice, all kinds of advice. It'll be a great day.
Should be a great day. I think we've got about 180 for the room at the moment. I'd like to get up around 220, 230 if we can. So if you've not registered, now would be a great time to do that. The cost is $30, and it should be a great day. You can find it online at willag.org or call during regular business hours, 800-898-1065. Can still do that today if we're not after 5 o'clock in the evening. Through the noon hour, roughly speaking, on Monday, we will take walk-ins, but preference is that you just go ahead and go online over the weekend and get yourself registered. That's easier for us, for sure. And then we'll just check you in by your name. Now, it's kind of been a rough week, Mike, in New York, but the Dow Jones Industrial Average, any place else that it trades as well. I'm wondering what you think about this in the macroeconomic sense.
Well, I think in general, Todd, and this is what I talked about in the marketing presentation on Friday at the beef house, is that I think we are just completely surrounded by demand bears right now because of coronavirus. And I think the train has kind of left the station with only the demand cars on. And I'm hopeful that as we turn the calendar into March, we see the first notice day provide the wheat continued inversion. A lack of carrying charge where the March contract is premium to the May. We see the March corn finally coming around on the close on Friday. We see the March meal coming around. I think between delivery and the fact that we're turning the calendar, we need to come back and revisit the supply side. And it was interesting because one of the speakers on Friday's update, and I know we'll have Lance Honig, the big guy from Washington there with you. One of the speakers was one of the NAST people from the state of Illinois. And one of the big pearls of wisdom that he dropped in the presentation after I'd asked him a couple questions was, we may see the new crop up expectations by USDA and NAS at the same time as we see the resurvey results of the five big northern plain states, because my understanding from what he said was they cannot resurvey these producers until the harvesting is actually done, and that may be April into early May if the weather continues to be cold and wet up in those plain states. So these are the things that we've forgotten. We're 92% harvested in corn. That's over a billion bushels on a 13.7 billion bushel corn crop. I think we've just completely lost sight of the supply side of the equation at this point.
Yeah, and while USDA is not collecting that data from every state, we may note in North Dakota, in the state stories this week, that they did give an update. They're now 61% along, or 63, I don't quite recall which number it is. I think 61%, and they were 43% in December. So they are harvesting, and we're getting numbers from USDA in some form, at least at the state level, but not updated nationally. So we've got to keep track of that. It won't come, as I take it Mark Schleusner probably told you at the Beef House today, until they can really get a survey and handle on what's happening there. So the point then here is now we are through the February, I think, the point being that we don't have to roll basis contracts anymore. So what happens on Monday?
Well, I think what happens on Monday is if we don't get any new negative news, I think you're at a price level. I mean, if you look at the natural gas price at a 170 level, you're talking about a price not seen since March of 2016. And when you look at crude oil and unleaded gas, you're down at levels not seen since June of 2019. So I think you're at price levels. And this is where my colleague Steve that filled in for me live did such a great job Friday talking about the S&P 500. My opinion is very similar. I think you're really at a price level. You need to feed the bear at this point if you're going to go lower. So I would look for the dollar, because it continued to weaken last week, to maybe show a little bit of commodity friendliness and some short covering if we don't get fresh bearish news. I'd also say don't be surprised if we see the Chinese come in and start to purchase some of our agricultural goods, especially pork, because of the fact that we are now in the new phase one trading deal. And I think they're about ready to pull the trigger once they feel like the market's about ready to be stabilized.
What happens if coronavirus shows up in a bigger way in the United States?
Well, this is where I think Europe is the bigger thing to watch at this point, Todd, because we don't know for sure what the mortality rate is because of China. I think the fact that it's in Europe, and increasingly in Europe, we're going to get some harder numbers and some better numbers. I will be adjusting my analysis. In other words, I will not look as friendly, price friendly in this market if we see the coronavirus worsen in terms of mortality rate. But all the indicators right now, and the boots on the ground over contacts in Singapore, for instance, and newspapers that I buy over in Asia right now, continue to say that they're down, but they're not out. It's because they're still recovering, and they're not dying from this virus. So demand is pushed back. It's not dead.
So what do you think about this March corn at 366.5? You mentioned that. Are we far enough down at this point?
Yeah, I was really surprised we took out the August-September lows from last year on, I believe it was Thursday, and retested that on Friday. I think the corn is just simply waiting for the wheat futures to find a bottom, and I think the commitment of traders data, where the funds were very, very long wheat going into last Friday's report, I think we'll see a big pullback in terms of fund length. So as soon as I see the wheat market bottom, I think the corn market, the March specifically, and the spreads will find support, because now that March is in delivery, it's also the cash contract in the country. And it would suggest with these basis levels that it needs to be supported, not pushed down, unless it's because of wheat.
USDA is telling us the domestic crush for bean meal is really strong. I guess we'll know more about that next week.
Yeah, and you know, the crush margins, they slipped a little bit, but they're still 80 cents a bushel. They're still very friendly when it comes right down to it. And you know, Argentina, I think what Eric Snodgrass talked about in Argentina is one of those stories that has not been dealt with. Again, it's a supply side story that no one's really talking about right now. Everybody is pushing crop totals up. We saw the Buenos Aires Grains Exchange jump both the beans and the corn supply numbers, production numbers for Argentina on Friday morning. I think it's just way too early given their weather pattern. So supply, I think, needs to come back into focus, and I think next week it should.
So we'll get that back in focus next week. Do you have things you've been talking with your livestock folks about in the last week or so?
Well, you know, the biggest thing I've been talking about is locking in springtime energy needs at this stage of the game. I think from a livestock perspective, that's certainly a high priority as well. I think the cash corn market, while I think it's down a little bit, it's not down as much as I thought it would be. So I'm monitoring that. As soon as I see a wheat bottom, I'll probably start recommending locking in spring and summer feed needs at this point for livestock producers. I would go back to what we talked about last Friday as well, Todd. I think that the hog market, between the dollar, the hogs, and a couple of commodity indexes I look at. These are the top three triggers to suggest to me that we can still provide a demand low down the road in 2020, led by the livestock markets, especially the hogs. And we did see China come in and buy hogs on the weekly export sales along with sorghum, so that was good.
So let me separate old and new crop for corn out, or the, as an input, relatively speaking, because you're telling me, you know, that you, I think you're telling me that you see better prices, certainly for old crop through the summer months, potentially.
Correct.
But once we get to the acreage numbers in March and we start planting, do you see it differently for new crop?
Not necessarily, because, you know, that 2.6 billion bushel carryover that Steve was talking about on the live radio Friday, that's in everybody's minds in Chicago. Well, what if that 2.6 is not there because all of a sudden we have erased 400 or 500 million bushels from the 2019 crop, and now all of a sudden we're talking about just at or just below a 2 billion bushel corn crop for this new crop year? How does the trade and the cash trade specifically react to that, and how much forward buying will they be willing to take on because they're nervous because we haven't gotten it planted yet? I think this is the dynamic that is going to be, certainly on my part, on the corn panel, something I want to explore on Tuesday with the producers that are there.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. You'll be helping us to wrap up a full day over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. You got a quick few over there today. Were farmers at your meeting today in an okay mood?
They were as expected. I cracked a lot of jokes. I talked a lot about coronavirus because I think all we've heard is negative stuff about coronavirus. I had a livestock client send me a text this afternoon, and he pulled out his cattle medicine box and showed me a coronavirus vial that he uses before he goes in calves to help his helps his cows and his heifers before he calves. So, I mean, I think that's where we're at right now, is that we really got to just hang in there and think big picture and long term.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Todd.
That's Mike Zuzlow. He's with globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas, and has already arrived at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, in preparation for next Tuesday's all-day Ag Outlook. You can join us. All you have to do is buy a ticket online right now at WILLAG.org. Now, you heard Mike refer a couple of times to his colleague Steve Erdman filling in for him. In fact, that did happen because I couldn't get hold of Mike during the show. Recorded him after the fact, but I thought it might be important for you to hear what Steve Erdman, who's the president of EFG Group out of Chicago, had to say during our conversation. I do want to ask you a couple of quick things about what this market looks like. Let's start with the Dow Jones Industrial Average and what's happened this week across that marketplace, because it's been a rough week. Today seems better, despite the fact that we've got a 500-point loss going at the moment.
Right. We're good 300 points off the lows, and I think actually the market has taken a sigh of relief from that, Todd, to be honest with you. Everybody's blaming the uncertainty of the coronavirus and how it's suggested it could impact our economy and how it is impacting the supply chains that are coming out of China, given the fact that China produces as many different products that come into our country. I think it's unsettling to the economy in general. But I think what people have forgotten is what a steep incline the equity markets were on when we rallied the Dow up to 29,500. It's kind of like a hammerhead stall for an airplane. It can't keep that angle of descent for a sustained period of time without seeing a major correction. And I think to this point, we've probably corrected 15 or 16%. And quite frankly, that's not even as deep as we've done 2 years ago. In 2018, I believe the E-mini corrected 21%, so this should be expected in terms of the correction that we've seen thus far. Now, I don't think the trade, especially New York, Wall Street, has a real good feel about what we'll do from here. We saw some other financial markets. For example, the gold market was off $55 to $60 today. Silver was off $1.10 plus, and it's still trading, but to me, that would suggest some deleveraging from some of these other products, whether they're deleveraging to meet margin calls on their margined account in equities, or if they're seeing a capital fund flow from metals, because we have had a pretty decent run-up in the gold market. And if people may be deleveraging in the precious metals markets to put money into the equity markets or the stock markets, given the fact that we've corrected this much. So it's really, you know, when you see the VIX trading up to the March VIX today traded up to 29.98, almost 30. I mean, we've done that four or five times in the last 5 years. It's a great indication that there's a tremendous amount of uncertainty in the market. And I think people got a little bit too comfortable just assuming that the stock market's going to rally every day, that the tech stocks, if I had anything to suggest to people to look for stability, look to the NASDAQ. And when the NASDAQ reasserts itself, leading the E-mini S&P, for example, or the mini Dow, then it's the tech sector that's coming back, reasserting itself and taking the lead. The whole way up, this whole rally from 2009 has been led by the tech sector. And I think it's critically important that people keep an eye on that to look for that as first indication of stability in the markets resuming their trend.
Well, I have a question about that because I was looking back at the Dow and the S&P 500 and just thinking about what has happened and what this rally has looked like and seeing a correction this week. Whether we stabilize here or not, I think, is really important. Since December of 2017, when the tax break was passed and actually signed, it's been pretty volatile. And I wonder if you see that as a base building for the marketplace. And I don't know whether that's a base building for a top or a bottom.
Well, I see the volatility that you're suggesting, and it is reflected, believe it or not, in the charts, because we were pretty sedate. It was still in an uptrend, but beginning right in that December time frame, you started to see broader weekly ranges, and I mean, the market exhibits that kind of volatility graphically when you see what we've done since that period of time in late 2017. The market has continue to rally. It looks to me what we've done now since that period of time could be construed as the beginning of a head and shoulders formation, with the head being what we did 2 weeks ago. So technically, I would suggest this is more of a potential top than it is a resting point, a consolidation point before we resume the uptrend. And I think people, that's a real good point, Todd. People need to be mindful of that and how much the market can come back, or even where the best support is, because the best support, given that late 2017 the new tax laws, I think the market had the best support down around 23,000, 23,100 in the Dow. So, that's a reflection of the uncertainty that's in the market right now. People aren't sure if this is just a consolidation point and a correction, and we're going to resume the uptrend, or if it's potentially topped. I saw an article about 10 days ago that was talking about W.D. Gann and how Gann always said that time and price come together. And this article suggested that from our low in March of 2009 at 61.09, if you add all of the trading days from that time period between then and now, the target would have been 34.11 in the E-mini S&P. And we made our high, if I'm not mistaken, at 33.93. So we came within 18 points of a time and price target. So, you know, I don't know how much credence you put into that, but it's another way of at least trying to calculate where the market went, you know, and how it needs to correct when we've had that parabolic uptrend. In my humble opinion, it would have been a lot healthier if the Fed would have not taken the browbeating that it got from President Trump, and if we would have continued to raise interest rates so you take some of the pressure off of the equity markets that we've gone through. Because quite frankly, since 2009, the equity markets, because of zero interest rates or very, very low short-term rates, the equity markets have been the best game in town, and I think that's added to the over-exuberance in our market, in our equity markets.
Okay, so I've got 2 minutes left here. What's your best advice for producers, old or new crop, soybeans or corn, your choice?
I think old crop corn right now, the market, the basis levels have been unusually strong, and I think The cash markets have been disrupted in the last week or 10 days because of the equity markets. But I think the Trump cash has given the producer a stronger hand in owning cash grain. I think the guys, farmers need to continue to look for opportunity in carry. They need to see if the spreads are offering them any additional margin for carrying their grain by hedging in the deferred months. I think you need to be smart about coming into the spring season. I think that they've had the ability to pay their operating notes to some degree with some of the Trump cash that they've received, and I think that's not going to – we haven't seen the cash movement in the first part of the year that we typically do. Right now, the trade is suggesting we're going to plant, you know, everybody knows this, 94 to 96 million acres. And right now, the NAS is suggesting that our ending stocks could be as high as 2.6 billion. There's nothing bullish about that. But, I mean, now that we've broken the market back down, I think we're about 10 cents away from some pretty good support. And I think you have to look at what the market's done in the last 4 years. And the corn market has been in a pretty well-defined trading range, except for when we popped out up to the 450 level, for good reason.
Hey, thanks so much, Steve, for filling in on short notice. I appreciate it.
Sure, Todd. It's my pleasure. It's good talking with you.
Steve Erdman is with EFG Group. He's out of Chicago. Of course, he's a native just north of Bloomington, Illinois, filling in for Mike Zuzulo this afternoon here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. In today's agricultural news, during an interview this morning on NPR's Morning Edition, the communications director of President Trump's 2020 campaign was asked if the imposition of tariffs on goods coming into the United States from China, the trade battle with that country, and the countervailing subsidies paid to U.S. farmers, if that felt kind of like socialism. Tim Murtaugh said no.
No, certainly not. It's trying to force the other countries to play on a level playing field. And let's take the tariffs, for example. Farmers, who are a very key part of the president's base of support, they know that battle with China was a fight worth having. Everybody who ever ran for president over the last 6 or 7 decades promised to get tough on China, but no one ever did until Donald Trump came along. And so farmers know, they're long-term planners. They know that is a battle that was worth having. And so absolutely, what the president has tried to do is put America first. We can't compete with these countries if they keep tilting the playing field against us. His aim was to level the playing field, and that's how he set about doing it.
Again, Tim Murtaugh is the communications director for President Trump's 2020 campaign. The Trump administration has issued about $24 billion to farmers via the Commodity Credit Corporation over the past 2 years. The president has said more payments could come this year if the Phase One trade deal is not fulfilled by China and USMCA is not fully implemented, among other items. Canada, by the way, has yet to ratify the update to the 1990s era NAFTA deal. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C., where the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, appears to be backing down, maybe, on its extensive use of blending exemptions for smaller oil refineries. This is related to ethanol. A Reuters report says the decision comes after last month's Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling that vacated three existing waivers and set stricter requirements for exempting refineries from their obligations under the Renewable Fuels Standard. It's been well documented that the EPA drastically ramped up its use of refinery waivers under President Donald Trump. That sparked a fierce backlash from farmers. The White House has been struggling to find a compromise between oil and agriculture. Now, the court decision found only the small oil refineries, which have maintained blending exemptions continuously since 2011, are eligible to apply for the extended waivers. Oil and biofuel industry estimates both say that could preclude all but three oil refineries from obtaining exemptions. The EPA is currently reviewing 23 petitions for blending waivers, and most are expected to be rejected. However, Politico reported today that 13 Republican senators told the president the federal appeals court decision could raise gasoline prices for drivers. The senators asked Mr. Trump to file a petition for a rehearing and potentially to seek a Supreme Court review. On a related note, yesterday at a House hearing, EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler was tight-lipped about the decision on blending waivers, but said the agency would issue guidance within days, not weeks. And finally, this note, the Drug Enforcement Agency, or the DEA, says it will not require all labs testing the THC levels of U.S. hemp to be certified by the agency during the 2020 crop year. Again, this comes from Politico, which says that offers producers a little more flexibility because it will alleviate potential bottlenecks at the more limited number of labs that have the certification. Greg Ibaugh, the Undersecretary of Marketing and Regulatory Programs, first announced the change during remarks given to the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture. USDA is also planning to give states more options for disposing of, quote, hot hemp, which are plants with THC levels above 0.3%. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Hey, you know, next Tuesday is the all-day ag outlook, and now is the time for you to buy that ticket if you've not yet, or maybe to buy your neighbor or your landlord a ticket if you'd like for the all-day ag outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. The cost is just $30, and you can't find a better deal. For that $30, you'll get a Beef House roll and coffee in the morning. It's a very good roll, by the way. And then a Beef House lunch. That's worth it all on its own, but you'll also be able to hear and ask questions about the marketplace from Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net, Aaron Curtis from Midco, Brian Stark of the Andersons, Chuck Shelby from Risk Management Commodities, Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing, Merrill Crowley of Midwest Market Solutions, Alan Dearden from AgReview, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef AgriMarketing, Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, Mike Zuzlo of GlobalAnalytics.biz, Jackie Vakes will be there from Total Farm Marketing, and so will Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting, along with Gary Schnicki, who will talk about the ARC PLC decision. Speaking of which, we'll take that up with him Monday during an interview, not for air until Tuesday afternoon, and you'll be in your vehicles by the time this airs, so you'll be able to listen to it, even if you buy your ticket for the all-day ag outlook. But this is a special program. I won't do an update on Tuesday. Instead, I'll talk to Gary for about 20 minutes or so. We'll take up the ARC, the PLC. This is the final day of the February crop insurance price setting month, so he'll have all the details. That'll happen on Tuesday afternoon after you're done with the all-day ag outlook. Gary will be on the air at that time. If you can't make it over, be sure to tune in Tuesday as well. The other folks that will be with us during the all-day ag outlook include Lance Honig from USDA NASS. He's the chief of the crops branch. I'm sure you'll have a whole bunch of questions for him. And Steve Mulberger will be there, the vice president of crop risk services, along with Eric Snodgrass, who in fact joins us right now. He's from Nutrien Ag Solutions. And Agrible, hey, Eric, thanks for being with us for the day.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, let's turn our attention maybe not directly to the weather happening today, but longer term. Have you been thinking about this? And I guess I'm really hoping that you have taken a quick look at it. And by the time we get to next Tuesday for that all-day ag outlook, you'll have this is a preview of what you're going to tell producers about the month of March and April or something a little further out.
Yeah. And the good news is by next Tuesday, when we're at the all-day ag outlook, I'll be able to share with everybody some brand new forecast information that comes out at the beginning of every month. So right now, this is more like, hey, we need to be watching a few things when we think about what March and April are going to be giving us. And while today we've got, you know, these light flurries all over central Illinois, a little clipper system coming down, not doing much, but giving us actually some cooler weather, you know, upper 20s versus what we've seen too much of this winter. We need to be talking about what that longer term change is going to look like. So what's it going to be changing from? Well, I looked back over this winter, and we've actually spent 75% of our days this winter with above average temperatures here in the Midwest. So the question is anything upsetting that as we go into spring? In other words, are we looking at a warm spring? Are we looking at a wet spring or cold and dry? And right now, I think all the action is happening out west. And so we got some brand new data coming in. And what it's suggesting is that from about March 7th through about April 7th, the chances of us slowing the pattern down, giving us long stretches of drier weather, I just don't see it right now. In other words, the problems we've been having with some excess moisture across the whole of the Midwest, I don't necessarily see that changing anytime soon. But colder air seems to want to stay west. In fact, we've been watching a trough dip off of the coast of California, which is going to be absolutely critical for the rainfall in California in the next month or so. But around here, I don't see anything that tells me, hey, look out for cold weather. I don't see anything that looks for me to tell you, look out for a long-term drier pattern either as we progress into the beginning of what will be our spring planting time period as we get toward the end of March and into April.
Hey, you know, I'm interested. Can you tell me about the situation in California, or at least a bit more?
Yeah, so California's had an incredibly dry 2020 so far. Some locations in there have not even measured rainfall in the Central Valley of California since the start of the new year. The mountains are sitting at about 50% of normal snowfall. And to understand what that is in the Sierra Nevadas, some of the highest peaks are right now 200 inches in deficit in snowfall. So what we're watching is in California, the pattern is adjusting such that a trough is beginning to form off of the West Coast. Now, that trough off the West Coast is finally going to direct some of the moisture into California. But our question is it too little too late? They all want what they call the miracle March to happen to rebound their precipitation. But at this stage, I'm quite concerned that they're not going to be getting exactly what they need. But some return to moisture is going to be critical for California.
Am I right that Argentina is drier too?
Yeah. So when we think about South America, Brazil's eastern growing regions, Brazil's central growing regions over the next 10 days are showing up wet. But we've now seen 7 model runs in a row that have been forecasting that in the near term, maybe over the next 10 to 15 days, that Argentina and southern Brazil are going to be on the drier side of things. And this will be critical for the health of that crop in that area. Now, up to this point, they've had rain, and that was a pretty big model failure back at the end of January when we were forecasting February. But I've seen some consistent reports now that Argentina may be struggling with moisture as we progress into the month of March.
The opposite is the problem in the southeastern part of the United States, I take it.
Yeah, so when we come back to the U.S., where we would want to be getting a crop established and planted early. Remember, they plant everything in Texas over to North Carolina as fast as they can, so it's harvested early and straight on to the markets, you know, straight out through the ports. Well, the problem this year is there are parts of the Mid-South, parts of Georgia, parts of Mississippi, Alabama, those states where we're talking about an excess. This is excess, by the way, of a foot of rain in the last 30 days. So we have a big section of the South going all the way over to Texas that's really dealing with a massive surplus of water. And next week, I'm talking about severe weather there and another 2 to 3 inches of rainfall. So the U.S. in the Southeast and Mid-South is really struggling right now.
Hey, I'm looking forward big time to having you over at the All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Can't wait to hear what you have to say there.
It'll be a lot of fun. And I'll, like I said, have some brand new information to shed some light on if spring 2019 is going to be a repeat or we get a great spring 2020 that could give us outstanding planting windows and get this next crop rolling.
Indeed, that is Eric Snodgrass. He's with Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agrible joined us here on the Closing Market Report to wrap up this Friday afternoon edition of the program. You can join Eric next week, myself, and a whole bunch of other folks too, if you come over to the Beef House in Covington, Indiana for the All Day Ag Outlook. Now, don't worry, we don't close down our registration online for a while yet, but you'll need to get in soon. willag.org, willag.org, and get yourself registered. The cost is just $30. It's an amazing event. I know you're going to want to be there because we have a whole lot to talk about. I mean, we have a lot to talk about as it's related to the weather, the government, outside forces, what's happening in agriculture today. You need to be there. The cost is $30. Sign up now, and we'll see you next Tuesday at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. The doors open at 8 a.m. Central, 9 o'clock in the Eastern Time Zone.